Let's turn now to God's Word in Hebrews and chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11. In our series on Sunday mornings, we're working our way through chapter 11 of Hebrews, and we're coming very near the end. And this morning, this is page 1210 on the Church Bible. This morning we reach verse 31. By faith, the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who are disobedient. I wonder if you ever feel that you're a nobody. Nobody notices you. You get lost in the crowd. So many people there are on planet Earth. Why should you be recognized? I wonder if at times you feel dirty. You've done things you're ashamed of, and you feel tainted. Maybe there are times you feel unloved. Nobody shows you any affection, kindness, or faithfulness. Although it's a bit dated now to quote Katy Perry, do you ever feel like a plastic bag, drifting through the wind, wanting to start again? Now, those are not uncommon feelings in our day and age, or in any day and age. And the woman of faith that we're going to consider this morning had all those feelings. She felt a nobody in a crowded city. She felt dirty through many sexual partners. She felt unloved, used, and discarded. And she really wanted to start life all over again. And here we have this verse before us. By faith the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient. Or, as it could also be read, the disobedient, the unbelieving. And when we come across a verse like this, we've got questions. We've got a question of who was this prostitute Rahab? Where did she live and what was her faith? We have a question about the spies that are mentioned here. What were they doing spying, and what were they doing in Rahab's house? A question about the disobedient or the unbelieving. Who were they? Why were they killed? And a question about its significance for us today as well. Here's a verse in a book that was written 2,000 years ago. What's it got to do with me today? Well, to find out the answers to our questions, we've got to go back to the Old Testament and to the book of Joshua, like we did last week with the fall of Jericho. And so we're going to, I know you've only, some of you just found Hebrews 11, but we're going to go to Joshua and to chapter 2. For us not to forget the verse we're looking at, I'll put it on the screen. But we're going back to Joshua in chapter 2, and this is page... Thank you. 216 on the Church Bible. And as we come back here to Joshua chapter 2, we're going to come across the account of the two spies and the shady lady. When I mentioned that in the boot room just now, Tim said that sounds like cocktail order. Pete said it sounds like a title for Mission Impossible. I prefer spooks myself. Two spies and a shady lady. Here we are in Joshua chapter 2. We're going to work our way through Joshua chapter 2, seeing exactly what happened, and then we'll try and find out some kind of significance, meaning for us today. So here we are. The story all starts in a very smelly place, verse 1. No matter how you say that, it sounds rude, so I'm not going to say it. Now, Israel had come out of Egypt. They'd been over 40 years in the wilderness, going around the desert, wandering around as punishment. But they were now on the borders of the promised land, and they were just about to enter the promised land. Their expectations were high, and the excitement within all the Israelites was brimming over. But before they go into that promised land to conquer it, Joshua, their leader, he devises a plan. They've got to check out the promised land, especially Jericho. Now, Jericho was a formidable city. We heard about this last week through Jamie. It was the lowest city on planet Earth, and I believe it still is. It was a strategic gateway into Canaan, a formidable obstacle to conquering the promised land. So if you conquered Jericho, then most of the land would open up to you. If you failed at Jericho, you'd probably fail through the rest of the land. So he sends out these two spies at the end of verse 1. Go, look over the land, especially Jericho. So these spies, we know they are young men. We know that from later on in the account. These two young spies, they go into the promised land, they enter Jericho, and they enter the house of a prostitute named Rahab, and they stayed there. They're to find out the vulnerability and the weaknesses and the feeling of the people in the land. Is the land opened? Is it closed? How are the people feeling? What's their resistance? Where's their power? Where's their might? What's their armies like? What's their walls like? All the kind of things these spies needed to find out and report back to Joshua. So they get to Jericho and they enter this house of this prostitute Rahab. And immediately a question arises. What were two men of God doing in a brothel? Well, they were not there for any immoral reasons, though they were young men on a mission away from home. But they were there for an obvious reason. Many men would have gone in and out of that house. And they would have all gone in disguise or under the cover of darkness. None would have walked in brazenly at all. They would all go in seekingly to go in unnoticed. And they could hide there. Surely rule number one in the spying handbook is don't be conspicuous. So where could they hide? Where other men go and are not noticed. Rahab, the prostitute's house. So that's why they're there. However, they're discovered. Verse 2, the king of Jericho finds out. He's told, look, some of the Israelites have come here tonight to spy out the land. So he makes a demand of Rahab. Verse 3, so the king of Jericho sent this message to Rahab. Bring out the men who came to you and entered your house, because they have come to spy out the whole land. Here's this demand given. Now, how's Rahab going to respond to this king's demand? Well, she would not give them up. Verse 4. But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them. She said, yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they had come from. At dusk, when it was time to close the city gate, they left. I don't know which way they went. Go after them quickly. You may catch up with them. But she'd taken them up to the roof and hidden them under the stalks of flax she had laid out on the roof. So the men set out in pursuit of the spies on the road that leads to the fords of the Jordan. And as soon as the pursuers had gone out, the gate was shut. The king had given a command. Rahab was non-compliant. She'd spent many years rebelling against the norm. She'd hidden them, and she sent the police off in a different direction. But she tells a lie. And many people try to make a lot about Rahab's lie that she tells here. She tells two lies. Verse 4 seems to be a lie. I don't know where these men came from. Well, she did. And then she says they've gone, when in fact she's hidden them. So she certainly told an untruth. She was used to covering up for different kinds of men, so she wasn't. She was probably very good at telling lies. But what are we to make of that? This woman who told the lie, and the Bible doesn't make any judgment on it at all. It doesn't say whether she was right or wrong. There's no moral judgment made upon her lie. What are we to make of it? Well, this could well be something like answering a fool according to their folly. The book of Proverbs tells us to do that. Answer a fool according to his folly. See, this king of Jericho was being totally foolish in denying God, for the fool says in his heart, there is no God. He's ignoring God. He wants to harm God's people. He should never have made this request. It's totally foolish. And he gets the answer he deserves. So if a gang were to come round my house and were to say, bring out your wife and children. We want to damage them and do them harm. And if my wife and children were in the house, I wouldn't say to them, oh yeah, they're in the lounge, come on in. I'd say, they're not here, shove off. Well, it depends how many of them there were. how mean and burly they look, but I said, they're not here. I think that's legitimate. I answer a fool according to his folly. He's got no right to ask that question. It's a fool. So Rahab, she sends these people off in a different direction. Why does she do this? Is it not risky? She is playing a high-stakes game of risk with these men. Her life was in danger if the king found out. Israel was the enemy coming to invade the land. But she defends them, she protects them, she hides them. She covers up for them. Why does she do that? Well, the answer is really quite wonderful. That Rahab had come to an amazing faith in the true and the living God. Look at verse 8. Before the spies lay down for the night, she went up on the roof, and she said to them, I know that the Lord has given this land to you, and that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. She knows that. Reports reached her, and probably all of Jericho. But the rest did not believe. They were disobedient. And then she says in verse 10, we've heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to Sihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. When we heard of it, our hearts sank, and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is God in heaven above and on the earth below. These are amazing words from this prostitute Rahab, this pagan living in a pagan city called Jericho. She wasn't an Israelite. She hadn't been traveling with the Israelites. But these words that she states, they are words of strong faith. She had come to fear the Lord. And notice how the text puts the name the Lord there. Three times, verse 9, verse 10, and verse 11, it's the Lord with capital letters. Now, all of you remember the letter Y for the children's alphabet, Yahweh. And when we told it to the children, it's the covenant name of God. It's the special name of God. So the Old Testament uses lots of names for God, but the special covenant name for God is Yahweh. It's his personal name. And whenever it appears in our English Old Testament, it's always capitalized. And so you'll note there that the word Lord is capitalized. This is Yahweh. She knew of Yahweh. Lots of people would know about El Shaddai, the great one, or El Elohim, the God of gods. But not many would know of Yahweh, but she does. She uses the covenant name of God. And what's more, she hears about all that this covenant God had done for Israel. So she repeats about what happened in Egypt, the way that they came out through the Red Sea. Now, Egypt was the world power of the day. So nobody could defeat Egypt, but Yahweh had. Boy, this is something. And she also hears about these two strange kings to us, Sihon and Og. And the Israelites had defeated them as well, or rather Yahweh had defeated them through Israel. Sihon and Og, they were famous kings at the time of Rahab, or just before the time of Rahab. Their reputation spread far and wide. They produced fear in other people. Sihon and Og were powerful kings with mean armies, and they were defeated. Og was a king of Bashan. He ruled over 60 cities. And those cities were fortified with high walls and with gates with an intricate locking mechanism. And the Israelites had defeated them. And this lady, Rahab, she'd heard of this. She knew that Yahweh, the Lord, was behind this. Not Israel's armies or strategies or techniques of warfare, but the Lord had done this. And that's what she says. This is her personal faith in the true and living God. She had heard of the mighty deeds of the Lord, and she knew that Yahweh was the Lord. He is God. And then quite wonderfully, at the end of verse 11, she confesses her faith in him. For the Lord, Yahweh, your God, is God in heaven above and on the earth below. Do you know those words that she uses there? How she got them, we don't know. But the words that she uses there are the exact words that the Israelites had to confess in their covenant to God. Listen to this from Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 39. Moses says to the Israelites, "Acknowledge and take to heart this day that the Lord is God in heaven above and on the earth below. There is no other." And an Israelite had to confess that. That was their confession of faith in the Old Testament. The Lord is God in heaven above and on the earth below. There is no other. And Rahab says, "For the Lord your God is God in heaven above and on the earth below." This is Rahab's truth. So many are taken up and spend time with Rahab's lie. This is her truth. And then she pleads for her life in verse 12. "Now then, please swear to me by Yahweh, by the Lord, that you will show kindness to my family because I've shown kindness to you. Give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, and that you will save us from death." This is a plea from the heart. This wasn't just some kind of rehearsed language that she was used to giving to men. This came right from her heart. "Save us," she's saying. She really believed that God would have the victory in Jericho, and she knew that she and her family would perish. So she pleads for her life and for her salvation. And she wants her family included. She wants her mum and dad saved. She wants her brothers and sisters saved. She's doesn't talk about her husband or children, but she has a tender care for her family, mum, dad, brothers and sisters. And we might think she's a hardened prostitute. This is totally unexpected. This is like Julia Roberts flossing in Pretty Woman. You just don't expect this kind of thing, this kind of behavior. But she's really tender. She really cares for her parents and her family. And she wants them brought into the family, to the house, in order to be saved. So an agreement is reached. She's confessed her faith. She's pleaded for salvation. And in verse 14, the spies say, "Our lives for your lives," the men assured her. "If you don't tell what we are doing, we will treat you kindly and faithfully when the Lord gives us the land. You spare us, we'll spare you." You know, the words there in verse 14, they're quite amazing words in this context. When these spies say to her, "We will treat you kindly and faithfully," the word that's used there for kindly is again a covenant word. It's the Hebrew word chesed, which has to have two English words to translate it, because it's such a powerful, meaningful word that you can't just translate it with one English word. So usually this word chesed is translated loving kindness, steadfast love, unfailing love. You'll find it lots in the Psalms and lots in Deuteronomy, the covenant book. The unfailing love of the Lord, the steadfast love of the Lord. It's the one Hebrew word. And it's this word that these spies used to this woman. "We will treat you with chesed. We will treat you kindly and faithfully, lovingly. We will show you the covenant love of God." That's what they're saying. And I've gone all goose pimply as I thought that. It is amazing. I wonder how Rahab felt at that particular moment. See, when was the last time she'd ever been shown loving kindness by a man? Her customers did what they wanted to do to her. They treated her as they wanted, selfishly, spilling their lust onto her, walking away, maybe mistreating her in the process. How did she feel? She probably felt like that plastic bag or rubbish. Or she probably felt like the name of the place that the spies had just come from. She probably felt terrible, horrible about herself. And now she hears these tender, loving words by two young men in her house. "We will show you loving kindness. We will treat you kindly and faithfully." Maybe she had never heard that ever in all her days. So she probably felt like melting inside. Maybe when she heard this, "We will treat you kindly." Maybe all the air went out of her lungs. There was a deep hole in her stomach. She trembled down her arms and her legs and no doubt had tears in her eyes. "Really? You will do that? Do you know about the other men that come into this place? And you will treat me kindly and faithfully?" This is the covenant love of God. Love shown to the undeserving sinner. And further instructions are given, verse 15. "So she let them down by a rope through the window, for the house she lived in was part of the city wall. She said to them, 'Go to the hills so that the pursuers will not find you. Hide yourselves there for 3 days until they return. Then go on your way.' And the men reply, 'This oath you made us swear will not be binding on us unless when we enter the land, you have tied this scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down. And unless you've brought your father and your mother, your brothers, and all your family into your house, if any of them go outside your house into the street, their blood will be on their own heads. We'll not be responsible. As for those who are in the house with you, their blood will be on our head if a hand is laid on them. But if you tell what we're doing, we'll be released from the oath you made to us, where you made us swear.'" Two things Rahab had to do. One, she had to tie a scarlet cord on her window for visibility. Now, this was not a thin cotton thread. It had to be visible from the outside to the armies of Israel. So it might well have been the rope that's mentioned in verse 15. The scarlet cord was really important. Without it, there'd be no salvation for her. And she had to bring her family into her house under her roof, under that scarlet cord. Without the family being in the house, then they would not be delivered. This is the salvation plan. The family in the house, the scarlet cord displayed. Agreement is reached and off they go, verse 21. "Agreed," she replied, "let it be as you say." So she sent them away and they departed. And she tied the scarlet cord in the window. And the spies go back to Joshua and give him the account. And the salvation of God had come to Jericho that day. And this pagan prostitute had experienced the covenant love of God. And what's the significance for us? We could well ask, why is Joshua chapter 2 in the Bible? What's it doing there? It's here to show us the loving mercy of our God to sinners who live far off from him and who are in danger of death, destruction, and despair. See, this is a salvation story. Just as much as when Jesus came to the Samaritan woman in the well at Sychar in Samaria, salvation came to that woman. Just as much as when Jesus himself went through Jericho, maybe almost 2,000 years, not quite 1,500 years after this incident, Jesus came to Jericho, for it had been rebuilt. And he saw a man there called Zacchaeus, again a sinful tax collector, and salvation came to his house that day as well. And this is a salvation story. The use of covenant language here directs us to think of God's mercy and faithfulness and salvation. The covenant name of the Lord, Yahweh. The covenant action of God referred to kindness. And here is a woman who was saved from death, destruction, and despair. She'd heard of the great God of heaven and earth. She puts her faith in him. She'd heard of him. She had two representatives of Yahweh before her, these two spies. She probably thought, "Who are these men? They're in my house. Other men do terrible things in my house. These are young men. They're self-controlled. They don't try to take advantage of me. They don't try to overpower me. They respect me. They show me such love. These are lights shining in a dark place. These are true Israelites indeed." She confesses her faith. She seeks God's mercy. And she's saved. She has real faith. And her faith made her stand against and reject the whole of Jericho culture. Jericho was a pagan city, if ever there was one. Their entire worldview was pagan. There were false gods in abundance. There was immoral practices everywhere. Rahab stands against all that. She turns away from that. She rejects the gods of Jericho, the Canaanite gods. She turns to the holy God of Israel, and she stands alone. If the king had heard about this, she would have been killed. Her faith in God, which is what Hebrews 11 is all about, her faith in God saves her and makes her stand against the culture of the day. Here we see God's tender mercy, his loving kindness to a woman who is in real need of salvation. And again we ask, what's chapter 2 doing here? You see, you could do without it. You could go from chapter 1 to chapter 3 in the book of Joshua, and in one sense, nothing would be lost. The flow of history about how Israel went into the promised land would not be lost. You go straight from chapter 1 to chapter 3. Chapter 1 is God getting Joshua ready to lead. Chapter 3 is Joshua getting the Israelites ready to go to the promised land. Chapter 2, in one sense, is unnecessary for the history. So why is it there? It's there to show us God's loving kindness, tender mercy, his salvation to one shady lady and her family. In the midst of a book about invasions, cities being conquered, nations being turned out, land being possessed, the foundations of society being shaken, big, massive things going on with lots of people, in the midst of all of that, God's eye zooms down on one lady, Rahab. He sees her. He sees her faith, and he devises a way to save her. Do you know, God is still the same today. Exactly the same. Such big things happening in our world. Syria, Russia, Iraq, USA, and the confusion in the UK. In the midst of all this that makes our news almost on a daily basis, in the midst of all this, God's eye singles you out. He hears your cry for mercy. Now, I remember each one of my daughters has been in a junior school choir. For some of them, it was a long time ago, wasn't it? Sorry. they've been in a junior school choir. Each one of them. And in the junior school choir, then every year they join all the Surrey musical junior school choirs together, and they go to Dorking Halls or Woking or Barbican or the Royal Albert Hall, and they sing, and there's hundreds of children there singing away. Each time I went to see my three daughters, each time, I only had eyes for one. Hundreds of children saw one. The Lord sees hundreds, millions of people on planet Earth. He sees you. He loves you. And here's Rahab receiving such love. It's a salvation story. That's why chapter 2 is here. Doesn't need to be. Yes, it does. Because it shows us God's mercy. What happened to Rahab as we bring this to a close? What happened to her? The spies made this promise. She put out this scarlet cord. She gathered the family into the house. What's the end of the story? Come to chapter 6. Chapter 6 of Joshua. Jamie pointed out to us very clearly and helpfully last week about the fall of Jericho. God's mysterious tactics, marching around the city once a day for 6 days, then 7 times on the 7th day, and the walls came tumbling down. And Israel were to go straight in and enact God's judgment on a disbelieving, disobedient people that had rejected God and his ways, though they had just as much chance of salvation as Rahab had. So when Jericho fell and the Israelite armies went in, what happened to Rahab? Chapter 6, verse 22. Joshua said to the two men who had spied out the land, "Go into the prostitute's house and bring her out." They were to do it. It was them, those spies. "Go into the prostitute's house, bring her out, and all who belong to her in accordance with your oath to her." So the young men who had done the spying went in and brought out Rahab, her father and mother, her brothers and sisters, and all who belonged to her. They brought out her entire family and put them in a place outside the camp of Israel. She was safe. She was delivered. She was rescued from death, destruction, and despair. And do you know, you've got to think here of how the Israelites were rescued in Egypt, the Passover. And in one sense, this is a Passover reenacted in a pagan place called Jericho. See, what's the significance of bringing in her family to her house? Didn't the Israelites have to do that on that frightful Passover night? Yes, they did. They all had to be in the house. If they weren't in the house, then the destroying agency of God coming through Egypt that night would have destroyed all the people outside the house. So the whole family had to come in the house. And that's the same for Rahab. Bring them all into your house. And then what else did the Israelites have to do? They had to slay a lamb. And what did they do with the red blood? They had to put it around the frames. And the angel of death would see the red and would save the family. And Rahab's got to do exactly the same. She's got to have red. And they've all got to be in the house. Does it make any difference what color that cord or that rope was? Could it have been blue and white, green and yellow, red and black stripes? Does it really make any difference? I believe it did make a difference. Had to be red. Had to be red. Why? Well, pointing back to the Passover lamb. More importantly, pointing forward to the blood of Jesus Christ. And Rahab is saved, just as we're saved. We look back to the cross. She looks forward to the cross. What more did the spies tell her? Was it just one sentence or two sentences? Or did they describe more about the Passover and its significance? And Rahab is saved. And there's a sequel to her story. The sequel is wonderful. She joins the covenant people of God. She's in Jericho. She leaves Jericho. Where does she go? Verse 23 of chapter 6. She's placed on the outside of the camp of Israel. To be cleansed according to Levitical laws, no doubt. She's placed on the outside of the camp. Does she stay forever on the outside of the camp? No. Verse 25. But Joshua spared Rahab the prostitute with her family, all and all who belonged to her, because she hid the men Joshua had sent as spies to Jericho, and she lives among the Israelites to this day. Which, for those of you that are interested in the historicity of the Bible, which should be all of us, it shows that the book of Joshua was written while Rahab was still alive. You know, this is not a fairy tale made up by someone hundreds of years later. It's actually written during the time. She lives there amongst the Israelites to this day. Well, that day, Joshua's day. She's taken from Jericho to outside the camp to within the camp. But there's more. She married an Israelite man. And she had a family through an Israelite man. I'd like to say it was one of the spies, because that would be really romantic, wouldn't it? But I don't know if it was one of the spies, but I do know who it was. And for that, you've got to come to our last Bible reference in the New Testament in Matthew chapter 1. Matthew chapter 1. We know the name of her husband. We know the name of one of her children, too. It's page 965. Who did Rahab marry? Matthew chapter 1, verse 1. This is the genealogy of Jesus, the Messiah, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham was the father of Isaac, and Isaac the father of Jacob, and Jacob the father of Judah and his brothers. Judah the father of Perez and Zerah, whose mother was Tamar. Perez the father of Hezron, Hezron the father of Ram, Ram the father of Amminadab, Amminadab the father of Nashon, Nashon the father of Salmon, Salmon the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Rahab married Salmon. Fishy kind of guy. She married this man. And they had children. They had Boaz. Do you know about Boaz? It's another story. Read the book of Ruth. A man of God. And What a transformation. Rahab, a prostitute in pagan Jericho with all that culture, is now in Israel, a saved woman, bringing up children in a godly culture, and she produces Boaz. Tremendous transformation. But it doesn't stop there. You go on to verse 16 of Matthew chapter 1. And Jacob, the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, and Mary was the mother of Jesus, who is called the Messiah, which means that Rahab was the 29th great-grandmother of Jesus. I was going to say that 29 times, but time has gone. It's amazing. Our God is full of surprises. Whoever would expect that? A former prostitute in the lineage of Jesus. And you know, all the ladies that are mentioned here in the lineage of Jesus, they were all shady ladies of one kind or another. And Jesus would have heard about his lineage because it was a Jewish thing to do. And Mary, his mother, would have told him all about his family. No wonder Jesus was so kind to ladies and to those on the outskirts of society. And she's saved. And through her, the Savior comes. And note, when it says here in verse 5, the mother was Rahab, the word prostitute is not used. Do you know, in the Old Testament, Rahab is mentioned at least 3 times, and all 3 times she's called the prostitute Rahab. It's the add-on, the prostitute. She's known as the prostitute. She's referred to 3 times in the New Testament, twice as the prostitute Rahab, in our verse in Hebrews 11 and James chapter 2, the prostitute Rahab. This is how she's known. But here, no add-on. She's Rahab. She's got a new identity. She's rescued from death, destruction, and despair. God can do this for a lady, for a man. He can do it for you this morning. He can change your world around. He can give you a new name. He can give you a new nature, a new character, a new life. And though your sins are as scarlet, they can be as white as snow. And whatever you did beforehand, whatever you got up to, however you were known, whatever the add-on was to your life, now you can be known as a daughter of the living God, a son of the King through faith in Jesus Christ. Rahab was saved.